You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardner, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Alice wants what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and we're talking moccasin and Joe. Well, the party gonna have. Out in the St. John's wall.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Good evening, Marco Bill, and good evening, listeners around the globe. We're here in a town called Brownsville, Tennessee. And believe it or not, the hospitality here has been fantastic. We're at a place called Jay's Diner. Flo and Juan own the place, and they've been real hospitable towards us. People here sure are friendly, and I've got to tell you that there's quite a few Bigfoot believers out in this area. We've been traveling constantly, you guys, for the last 2-3 days. I don't even know what day of the week it is, but we've been going 20. That was Roger. You guys all remember Roger Peterson from the first Bigfoot Lives movie? Well, he's here with us tonight. We got the Snake Man, Bruce Shoopy. We got the Gentle Giant with us. And, of course, we got Chico. That's just a part of them that's going to be used in the Oprah Winfrey Network. Oop, I goofed. Have I said that? No. It's going to be a new reality show, ladies and gentlemen, and we're kind of happy and enthused about it, and we'll be knowing more about that next week and talking about it next week. But without any further ado, I want to say hello to everyone. And, by the way, my first guest tonight, we met him in Texas, and it was a town that I believe was called Monahans. Monahan, the city was Monahan, Texas, and a great guy and his wife from the Huddle House. If you have any of you people who've gone to the South, there's got to be 800 of those things across the country, and they are wonderful. This guy went above and beyond the call of duty. John Miller and his lovely bride and his staff was just impeccable. Between the service, between the food, the presentation of the food that was really plentiful, and their attitude. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you something. We eat all over this country. We're all over the place. And I got to tell you something. These Huddle Houses, especially the one there in the city of Monahan, Texas, has to be one of the best we've ever partaked in. And without any further ado, I'd like to go down there to Monahan, Texas, and get John Miller on just for a second. You out there, John?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. And thank you again, you and your lovely wife and your staff. My gosh, we have never been treated so nice as we were yesterday in your wonderful restaurant, the Huddle House. And my gosh, your staff and the portions that you guys, how do you do it for those prices? Will you tell me?
Well, I could tell you, Tom, but then I'd have to, you know, charge you money to know where the secret is. You know, what we do is we make good deals for big quantities of food, and we're able to give you a lot for your money. But let me tell you something, Tom. Having you down there yesterday was the highlight of the day for my staff. They couldn't stop talking about it after you left. They were just so happy you stopped by and had dinner with us.
And, you know, John, and thank you. And I've got to tell you, since we saw you, we've been in three different states, and it hasn't stopped. I mean, no matter where we stop to get gas, as people are going, as we're on the freeways and they go by us, they're taking pictures and waving, and my gosh, the autographs and everything that's been going on has been stupendous, just off the chain. But I want to tell you this, John. If you're an example for what Huddle House is, well, I'll tell you what, they got the right person in charge and at the helm, because ladies and gentlemen, if you're ever running through Texas and you ever get to the town of Monahans, stop in and see it. And by the way, how many other organizations do you have there between the Chinese restaurant, the markets, and the Mexican? Go ahead, mention them. Go ahead.
Well, the company that owns our Huddle House owns 37 convenience stores, 6 Baskin-Robbins, 5 Tire Centers, 8 Wood Centers, 4 Huddle Houses, and 31 Quick Eats Delis.
Wow, that is unbelievable. But you know what? Whatever he's doing, he's got to keep on doing it because he's got that secret formula because it works. And I'm sure that's the reason why your Huddle House in your region is number one. And I'm sure the rest of their businesses that man has is probably doing the same thing because he's got the right people at the helm. And once again, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you and your staff, and thank your lovely bride. And I can't wait. Next time we're down that way, we're going to step back and see you, okay?
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. I want to thank you for stopping at the store, man. We had a really great time visiting with you. And I just can't wait till you come back so we can visit with you some more and find out how your trip up to the Northeast went.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thanks so much, John. Take care, and we'll see you on the rebound, okay?
All right. You have a great day, Tom.
Bye-bye. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, this Huddle House franchise has to be one of the most fantastic places we've ever been because we frequent them so much because we're in and out. The food is great, plentiful, and fast. But you know what? We met somebody else here. It's Flo and Juan, and they have this place. It's Jay's Diner, and it's the old rock and roll place. You know, you got the – I thought there would be a jukebox up here. Yeah, okay. All right. Oh, the 50s Diner. And I'll tell you what, the owners come out there, they're wonderful, they're hospitable, they come shake your hand, see anything that you need, and what have you, and it's been a joy to be with these people. And I want to thank Juan and his lovely bride, Flo, and their kin that's working here, because the food here is superb, just as good as the Huddle Houses that we've hit across the country, and I want to thank them from the bottom of my heart. Okay? You're welcome, honey. You're welcome. Well, without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, what I want to do, because we got to get back on the road, I'm going to let you talk to a couple of the guys that haven't been on the show in a long time, and We're reunited after about 8 years. Bruce, why don't you come on over? Ladies and gentlemen, remember him? He's a snake wrangler from Paris, Texas. He's been in quite a few of our expeditions, and he's here with us tonight. And, Bruce, why don't you tell them what you've been doing and how things have been going with you. Here you go.
Hello, everybody. Well, we've been basically saying hello to everybody and, you know, taking pictures and signing autographs and all that and just traveling around. I just want to say that this is a lot of fun. Tom and these guys are awesome people. They're off the hook, to quote Tom's phrase. Oh, I've been catching snakes and all kinds of other critters and raccoons and stuff over in Paris and, well, working hard trying to get other things going here. And on the short note, I'd just like to say that to my lady out there, Rosebud, I miss you and I'll be home soon. God bless everybody.
Well, as you can see, he's a man with few words. But you get cooped up with these characters, and they never shut up. Without any further ado, I want the Gentle Giant to come over here and get on the phone. And I got to tell you something. I've learned with this guy. He's not only 7'4", ladies and gentlemen, but he's a gentleman. Okay, not a gentle giant, but a gentleman. He's well-versed, and you may be seeing him real soon on the film. I'm going to bring him here and let him just say hello to you guys, and maybe he'll give you a little insight of what's happening with him.
Hello, everybody. How's it going, Marco?
It's going great.
That's good. I'm glad everybody's doing great out there. All I can say is for everybody to buckle up their seatbelts and wait till it comes out. That's all I know what to say. And that's all I'm going to give the Raptor. Here's Tom.
Here's another one. If you thought the other one was, well, man, a few words, this one was just too much. The next guy I'm going to have on the show right now, ladies and gentlemen, his name is Chico. He's a Navy SEAL, and you can't say that he was a Navy SEAL because once a SEAL, always a SEAL. He's a gentleman that's got 8 decades under his belt plus, and I'll put him up against a guy half his age all day long. But I just want him to come on the show and say hello to everybody, and I'll let him give you a little insight of what we've been doing, what we're looking for, and what his experience has been with us on the road. Chico, say hello to everybody.
Yeah, hello everybody out there in the TV land and radio land and everybody that's searching for Bigfoot. My name is Chico, and I'm here to tell you that Bigfoot lives. I've seen him. I've touched him. And I've seen him on the ground. I've seen his tracks on the ground. And I've seen him off in the distance. And most of the times when I've seen the Bigfoot, it was that he was really interested in what I was doing there more than what I was interested in him, because he stood there and watched. But just as soon as you turn around and make a movement, he's off. So he's off to somewhere, La La Land or wherever it is. But I've got experience with him and Tom searching for Bigfoot. We've been all over the United States, and sometimes we've done, well, a couple of years ago, we've done 19 states in 12 days, and that's starting early in the morning and through the night until we got to where we wanted to go and back again. But it's nice talking to you. And
hey, Chico, can you do me a favor?
Yes.
Yeah, why don't you know, nobody's ever had a chance to listen to any of your encounter experiences. Could you talk a little bit about one of your experiences and give us some insight on your encounter with the creature?
Yes, I can. What I did see was one after somebody killed him. And
okay.
I was sorry to say that, and I was sorry to see that it was killed, because after the interview, I found out that it would have been nicer that if the person that shot him would have fought before he pulled the trigger. And, you know, people do go out in the woods with weapons, and that's for their own safety. And that's what he was doing out there. But he was not hunting for Bigfoot. He was
hunting for deer, and it scared the bejesus out of him. And when I saw it, what was left of it after other people that saw it wanted this, and some people wanted that, and I got to see with my own eyes that this was actually a Bigfoot. It was big enough. And, of course, you know me, I wasn't out there looking for one with a camera either, and I wasn't there to look for one. And it just happened to be one of these times when I wasn't out there looking for a Sasquatch or whatever you want to call it. But
What did it look like, Chico? I mean, give us a description of what you saw.
Okay. What I saw was it looked like was a gorilla made into an orangutan. That's what it looked like. The color was black and silver-like, and a red hair. And the top back of his head was sort of like up in a cone shape, but not so much as cone shape that you would think of a cone, but that's what you would call it because it was up in that direction. He had big eyebrows, big thick eyebrows, heavy eyebrows, a nose that was sort of small and but wide nose. And the nose did not protrude out so far. I lift up his lip to see if it had teeth, if it was young or if it was old. And it looked like the teeth were large teeth, and he had big eye teeth, like fangs, but they didn't stick down that far. And you can tell just by looking in his mouth that there was a few things in it. But time is getting of the essence now, and I just want to say, everybody, that thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again sometime.
Thanks, Bill. And, you know, when you ask Chico what time it is, he bills you a watch. But sometimes he goes over the deep end and tells a little bit too much. Ladies and gentlemen out there, if you want to hear more and you want to see Chico and all the rest of them, when the new reality show comes out, take a look and you'll see the whole story up close and personal. You know, we talked about, and you've heard him on my show, Roger Peterson. We had a ton of requests of people saying, my God, we saw his interview, we saw his incident. Well, he's here with us. I haven't seen him in 8 years, talked to him on the phone, and he's traveling now because of what we're doing. And I'm going to put him on the phone to say hello to everybody and all of his fans. And by the way, no matter where we go, he's infamous with that hat. And they all come over and ask for autographs and pictures. We just went through a ton of them here where we stopped. Here, Roger, say hello to your fan base and everybody out in the Bigfoot world.
Thank you, Tom. Hey, Marco, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Oh, I tell you what, for just having a heart attack last month, I'm doing real good.
Oh, my God.
Tom and the crew are taking real good care of me. And I'll tell you what, I feel very blessed to be here with these guys. It is so wonderful to see my brother from another mother's back so long, you know. And I'll tell you, Marco, I'm just juiced and ready to go. You know what I mean?
I sure do.
I'll tell you what, it is wonderful. And, you know, I really am grateful for all the people out there and the support that they've shown. And, you know, and I just didn't realize how many people I have really touched. You know what I'm saying, Marco?
I sure do.
And I'll tell you, it's a wonderful, beautiful feeling. It really is, Bill. You know,
well, Roger, give us a little description of how you guys travel. I don't think many people understand that. There's not been very much talk about it.
We are highballing down the road in Tom's pickup, about a year old now, and we've got the searching for Bigfoot trailer behind us. And I mean, I'll tell you, we're just stopping long enough to get gas and take some photographs and signatures, and then we're back on the road again, you know. And I'll tell you, we're just having a blast.
Well, give us an idea of where you were yesterday and where you are today.
Okay, well, yesterday we were sitting in Paris, Texas, a long way back, and I tell you the truth, I don't even know where we're at right now.
Okay, Bill. I promised I'd give you 20 minutes from the guys, and I did, and it's just been phenomenal, just totally phenomenal. I mean, Billy, I got to tell you, and by the way, everybody's asking about you, and they want to know, when is Bill, Marco Bill, coming out on one of the expeditions with you? And I says, well, I'm going to talk to him, and hopefully we'll get him out here real soon. So the ball's in your court, young man.
I understand. The problem with that is, though, we never can have a show if I go out.
Well, maybe you could take all the paraphernalia that you need.
Maybe you can't do that. It doesn't work that way. It's a station that's set up.
Okay. All right. Well, look, Bill, I want to thank you. And next week, I think we'll do another one. Hopefully all this shoot will be done and everything, and I can fill everybody in and give them all the good words, but I can't say nothing as of yet. And
no,
I understand. Everybody out there around the globe understands this. All I can tell you is that things are going very, very well out in the Bigfoot world. The team is here. We got some great guys. You're going to see some great film that they're taking. I'm going to tell you something else, too. They're going to be filming us with helicopters, so you're going to be seeing some great air shots with us up in the air in the helicopter, too. So it's going to be seeing a lot of new things that have never been done before, especially with Tom Biscardi and his crew. Billy, I want to thank you, and thank you all out there in Bigfoot world. And just get prepared, because down the road we got some wonderful things coming. And I was just reminded again to say, Rosebud, Bruce loves you and he misses you. And Kelly, Roger misses you. And the Gentle Giants, Miss Philly, he misses you. And Miss Calabash, wherever you are, I miss you. Bill, have a great night.
Good night and safe travel.
Thank you, Bill. Kudos and salutations to everyone around the globe. And we're signing off from Jay's Diner down here in Brownsville. And that's in Tennessee. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Tom and the SFBI team. We're going to go to a short little commercial right now, and we'll be right back, and we're going to talk with Jim from Arkansas.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage, available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. And ladies and gentlemen, before we go out here to Jim, what I want to kind of set the stage for you about it, there are some, if you go up on www.bigfootlive.com, that's www.bigfootlive.com, and you look and take a look at the what's on the show, on the side there, on the table of contents, what's on the show, and you go into that page, and you'll go down to number 4, which says interview Jim Dawson of Arkansas and discuss recent events. You're going to see that there's a slideshow of footprints and some tree formations there, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about, okay? And that's where we're going to be at, okay? So here we go. Jim, how are you?
Hey, Marco Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great. Did you
hear
Tom?
Awesome. Hello,
and his
everybody
team there.
I just heard Tom. I'm sorry I got on late. He said they were in Brownsville, Tennessee?
Yep.
Not so far from me.
I know. Well, they were in Paris, Texas yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I know what it's like to travel with Tom, and there's no stopping. I smoke. And let me tell you, Marco Bill, I've never seen anybody fill a gas tank so quickly and get a soda or get something to drink and get back in. I couldn't finish a cigarette and go to the bathroom. That's what it's like.
It's all business, isn't it?
Oh, there's no jacking around.
Yeah.
And unless there's a great Italian restaurant. If there's a great Italian restaurant somewhere, he will stop.
Yeah.
But other than that, and one time we must have went 40 miles out of our way to stop at an Italian restaurant somebody recommended. He was so excited. He wanted, what was it, linguine and clams.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I've never seen anybody get so fired up over linguine and clams in my life. We were all the way in fact, we had been to Vermont, and we were driving back to Chicago. He was going to drop me in Chicago and then head on back to California. And we went 40 miles out of our way, one way, just to go eat at this restaurant. And that's the only diversion we had on the whole trip. Darndest thing I've ever seen. I haven't been on the website to see the pictures that you had posted.
All you're going to do is describe them.
I'm not sure which one to speak about.
Well, here's what I did. I'll explain them to you. First of all, last time you were on the show, you talked about there was a footprint that you found, and one in February, and there was another one found in March.
That's correct.
And those within 10 miles of each other.
Correct.
And they were the same size of footprint.
Correct.
And that's what we wanted to talk about. And if people wanted to go up there, I mean, you're sure.
The formations are in between these two sites.
Yes, and then I've got the four pictures of the tree formations, the tree formations, and then also the dome.
Well, I have to ask you, the first footprint picture or the footprint picture that's got the with the moss, since I'm not online.
Which one is it? February or March?
February.
Okay.
That's the one that I found actually on a creek bank near the river in February. And, you know, in Arkansas, we had a very, very cold winter. There was no snow on the ground, but that creek bank is very sandy and very loamy. And of course, there's moss there, too. And you can see the outline of the toes. I believe it was a left foot.
Yeah.
17 inches, and I believe it was eight inches wide.
It's pretty good size.
It's pretty big. It's pretty big footprint, and it's all fun and games till it's about 100 yards from your house.
Right.
That was about 75 to 100 yards from my house. And you know what's interesting is before we found the footprint, Becky and I were sitting in the cabin. I've got a log home right on the river, and we had this terrible smell. I mean, it was awful. It was like wet dog and sewage backed up, and we thought our sewage line or septic line had backed up. And we checked all the drains, and all the water was draining, and the scent lingered in our house for about 2 hours. And we really thought our septic had backed up. And then about a week later, I went on the other side of the creek, and I found that footprint. And I was going to get some wood from our neighbors. We had ran out of kindling, and their grandchildren had cut up a bunch of pieces of wood very small with hatchets, and about 8-10 inches long, and then they'd split the limbs and stacked it at their house. And they live in Memphis, and they had a huge wood pile. So I went over to grab some wood from them to start my fire, and because I didn't have any kindling. And I found the footprint when I was walking on the other side of the creek going over to their cabin. And so I never go on that side of the creek. It was really odd that I'd went over there and just happened to find that footprint. And then...
Wow.
The other footprint is from about 10 miles away, due west, and there is actually a highline wire, power company highline, that's, I'm going to say 150 yards upstream from my house, north of my house, going across the river, heading due west, oddly enough. And along that route, off the highline a little ways, in, I think I said it last week on the show, I believe it was April, not of this year, but of the previous year, I had sold a tract of land. You know, I sell land, hunting property. I sell 3 to 5 acre tracts of land here in Arkansas. And when you buy a 3 to 5 acre tract of land, you get hunting rights on 2,500 acres and gated locked access to the river. And we financed the property. We lived up to 15 years on the note, so it's a real good deal. And I've sold this fella a 5 acre tract that the back of it had a creek on it. And he wanted to walk on the property, and we walked down, I'm going to say 100 yards into the woods, going down to the creek. He wanted to walk all the way to the back and see the creek, and we did. And as we walked back, I started noticing all these tree formations on this particular tract of land. And it was really intriguing, and there was a canopy. There's a tree that's woven, I believe it's in those pictures. It looks like an X. I'm looking straight up. You can see the sunshine coming
right,
down.
Right, that's the one that's up overhead.
Yeah, it's right
up there. Canopy overhead picture.
I took it with my iPhone. It's straight up over my head. But I just took the pictures recently. It's interesting. I sold the guy the tract of land. I saw all that. And he moved. He built a driveway and moved a park model in on the property within a week. And I didn't feel right about going back down there to take more pictures. I should have, but I didn't. Because he bought the property and moved in, I intended to go back down there and take pictures as soon as I discovered it, because there was a whole bunch. There's hickory trees that are bent over. I mean, you know, 2 and 3, 4 inches in diameter. There's several of them in there that are bent over. Trees are interwoven, and you can see all the tree formations in the pictures. Those aren't regular tree things. I mean, these aren't regular, you know, tree anomalies you'd see anywhere. I mean, they're pretty unusual. And then up the road from him, from that piece of property where I took the pictures of the tree formations, is where another guy found a 17-inch footprint in his backyard. And he called me, and I went over, and he showed me the pictures, and his brother emailed them over to me, and I sent them to you. So I believe I've discovered the trackway where these creatures cross over one river, and then go into the hunting area. And in this hunting area, we've got 3,500 acres up there, and it's some of the best hunting in a 2 or 3 state area. It's full of deer and turkey. There's some wild hogs in there. Not a lot of wild hogs, but there's some wild hogs. Full of rabbits and squirrel. And some of the best hunting, sincerely, in a 2 or 3 state area. And so, you know, these creatures don't have to go a long way. There's a lot of springs and creeks and ponds and lakes. Rivers. There's two rivers. One river is just west of here, and then I live right on a river, a spring-fed river. And both of the rivers join just downstream from me, about 12 miles downstream, 8 to 12 miles downstream.
But how far, Jim, how far, now, when you discovered those railroad spikes and the old train tracks that you followed out, now how far is that from that area?
From the footprint?
Well, yeah, the whole area you're talking about.
Well, where I discovered where the railroad spikes were, where they gifted me or left those railroad spikes, is about 150 yards up the creek from where I found that footprint.
Uh-huh. So it's very close, right?
Yes. And then where I found the tree formations due west along what I believe is their trackway is probably 5 to 7 miles from right here. And then another mile or a mile and a half from there is where the other 17-inch footprint appeared this March. So this February is when I found the footprint that you've got up there, and then the other footprint was this March.
Okay, and now how far is the railroad tracks from where you found the railroad spikes?
Oh, within 50 yards.
Oh, really? Okay.
But you have to understand, the railroad quit using wooden railroad ties.
Yeah, a long time ago.
20 years ago.
You're right.
They used concrete ties and clamps to hold the rails down.
Right.
You couldn't find, I mean, you might find one or two spikes if you walked 5 miles of track. You can't hardly find railroad spikes anymore.
I understand. That's why I was
alluding
to.
Yeah, and I found, what was there, 19 or 20 of them in that pile?
Yeah.
I see you guys' photographs. I'm 15, 19, 20. I can't remember how many were there.
I think there was 19 you had.
It's so unusual. I mean, and they were all left. They were laying the same direction in one pile in the middle of the creek on a rock. And Jack and I went through there two or three times a week. I mean, I would have seen them.
But right, and that's only like 150 yards from where the track was, right?
Yeah, at least, maybe 100. 100 to 150 yards. It's just up the creek. The creek flows into the river, and it's just up the creek from
there. So all this stuff is all real close.
Yeah, and the High Line is 150 yards upstream from me.
Uh-huh.
So, I really believe that they're following the High Lines as a trackway. I mean, if you were going to transverse 15 miles of property, would you want to go through the woods, or would you want to walk where it's clear?
Well, you want to walk in a secluded place, but it'd be nice and clear and easy to walk.
I mean,
people don't go out there, right?
I live 4 miles down a gravel road to get to my house in the first place. So I'm so far out in the woods, I don't get today's news till tomorrow in the first place.
I understand. And most of the people that are there probably only go out of the lakes. They really don't go deep into the woods, right?
Oh, no. They come to their cabins here, and there's 8 cabins in our little enclave here. And I'm the only one that lives here year-round. My neighbor right next door has been here twice in the last 2 years. The neighbor across the creek where I found the footprint, they've been here a couple times this summer, but they haven't been here in a year. My neighbor to my left comes in every 3 or 4 weeks. And then, I mean, but one of my neighbors, 2 doors down, lives in Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they're never here. I mean, there's virtually never anyone around here. You know, even though there's houses here, there's never anyone here.
Oh, I understand. So,
it looks semi-inhabited. And then there's a campground just downstream from me, and it's a pretty large campground. And what a great food source. I mean, if I were out trying to forage for food every day, I would certainly be around the dumpsters of the campgrounds and hang around those areas. It'd be easy pickings for food.
Oh, sure. That's pretty amazing.
But there's plenty of game, too. I mean, let's face the fact, if you had to get out and find your food every day, you're gonna go the path of least resistance.
What kind of fruits and berries do they have there?
I believe them. What's that?
What kind of fruits and berries and things do they have there?
A lot of blackberries.
Wild edible stuff.
Yeah, a lot of blackberries. There's a ton of blackberries. There's the occasional... There's occasional fruit trees, not a lot of orchards, but this is mostly hardwood. We don't have a lot of pulpwood or softwood around here. It's mostly hardwood, hickory, oak.
Yeah.
There are some groves of pines, but not very
many. Well, they got nuts then, too, right?
Tons of hickory nuts, right? Four or five big hickory trees right around. I have 22 trees, hardwood trees, in my front yard.
Wow.
I mean, when the fall hits and it's time to rake leaves, it takes me a week to rake the leaves. So, I mean, but we have a ton of hickories. There's walnut trees. And all the streams and creeks, we have a ton of mussels in the water.
Yeah.
And fish. Rainbow trout, bass, crappie, catfish, walleye, so on and so forth. Ton of fish to eat. For a carnivore, for a creature that lives off the land, and I don't care what it would be, a mountain lion, it doesn't matter. It's perfect. I mean, you've got so many streams and creeks and deer. When I drive through a cattle ranch on my way to my house, and regularly, and I'm not exaggerating, I count 50 to 60 deer in their fields.
Wow.
White-tailed deer.
Wow, that's pretty.
In fact, that no one ever hunts. This family won't let anybody hunt their property. The deer were eating hay one day this fall when I was driving through. They were near the road, and I stopped, and there were about 12 of them near the fence. They were eating the grass and the hay, and one of them looked up with hay hanging out of both sides of its mouth, kept chewing, and then just put its head back down and got another bite. It never ran and never did anything. So
it's pretty good.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, they don't have a lot of predators chasing them either. They would have been scared, you know. So
sure.
Which kind of sounds, you know, unusual when I tell you that there are creatures in this area, but there's no question. But I believe they move, Marco Bill, I believe they move 5, 10, 15 miles, and they'll stay in that area for a little bit, and then they'll move 5 or 10, 15 more miles. But
yeah, they're hunt kind of a foraging kind of a clan type, foraging family pods.
Absolutely. Yeah. I believe they're nocturnal. I believe they travel in a clan or a family group.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll eat and live in an area for a little bit, and then they'll move around. There's so many creeks and streams and lakes, ponds, that they you know. But there's plenty of food supply and water supply.
Wow.
And plenty of, you know, in northeast Arkansas, north central Arkansas, like we're, you know, I'm 7 miles from the Missouri border, right at the bottom of the Mark Twain National Forest. So they could move north or south, right through the middle of Missouri, right through Arkansas, through the Ozarks, down south, and never see a human being.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there's huge, in Missouri, you've got St. Louis on the eastern side and Kansas City on the western side. And really through the center of Missouri, I mean, up in the middle, you've got Lake of the Ozarks and Columbia, Missouri. But really through the middle of Missouri, north to south, there's nothing. It's all the Mark Twain National Forest.
Holy smokes.
I mean, you can run out of gas on some of those roads. There's no gas stations. So, I mean, you know, there's plenty of room for any creature to roam and move and be, not be hindered by being seen.
I mean, that's pretty interesting.
Scattered out, you know, but if you look at a Google Earth picture of north central Arkansas and southern Missouri all up through there, it's not that populated.
Well, what's amazing is that prior to this, you've had several incidents that have taken place on your property, like the pump pipe bent.
The pump pipe was bent over.
We've
had quite a bit of interaction, gifting. You know, I'd leave trout in the trees for them, and they'd leave rocks for me, and railroad spikes, and we've done that for some time, and it's interesting. My son, you know, has autism, and he's atypical autism. He's very affectionate, and we have a very very close relationship. And you know, we're out in the yard in the woods a lot together. And he's very affectionate. He wants to hug me, kiss me, hold my hand all the time. And he's 14 now, but even when he was, you know, 10, 11, 12, he's always been very affectionate, very close with me. And I believe, and there have been other people here, longtime researchers, that believe that the creatures watch us, that they, I don't know if they do or not, but they believe that the creatures watch us, and that they believe that it endears them, that we have such a close relationship, and, you know, I don't know about all that, but I do know that there's been quite a bit of unusual things happen and gifting and, you know, circumstances like that, footprints and...
Well, you heard Rocky last week, right, Jim?
What's that?
Rocky and Swede last week, what they told about their tracking experience, and they were tracking, and they picked up a track, and then they picked up another track. They followed it around. It was their own track. And then when they looked back, they were being tracked. The creature was behind them, tracking them.
It's amazing. But, you know, it's interesting. I was just talking to a couple of fellas up the hill, and I was telling about a reality show and the great stuff we got going on. And he said, do you really believe in Bigfoot? I said, well, it's not a matter of believing. I know the creatures exist. I don't try to get other people to believe in them. The truth is I know that they exist, and I want to be able to find them and not necessarily prove to the world. I want to move to the next level of what are they and what do they do.
Right, and we already know there's, just by the descriptions and some of the different DNA that we have, that there's several different species of this thing.
There must
be. So it's not, they're not all the same exact type of a creature. There's different body builds. There's different looks and things. Some are more human-like. Some are more ape. And you didn't hear Chico, but the one that he saw was more... But like a cross between an ape and an orangutan, but with a flat nose, not a ape nose or a flatter face type.
Well, you know, I've heard that too. I just caught the end of it. Did he say it was like a panther? Did I hear him say that or a...
No. He said a pointed head.
Oh, okay. I got you.
The head was pointy, not a cone, but pointy, and.
When did Chico have this sighting?
I don't know the exact. It's been quite a while ago, I think.
I see.
Before
you
met Tom.
I got such a kick out of Chico when he came here to Arkansas to my place. Every time he comes here, he wants to go trout fishing.
Yep.
And you know, he's so funny. He loves to catch the trout. He gets out there and he'll catch. He said, "I'm going to go catch our lunch." So Tom and I, we go ahead and just make lunch because we don't know if Chico's going to come back with a fish or not. If we don't make lunch, it will never eat. If we don't make lunch, he'll come back with three or four trout.
I understand. Well, I want to thank you for coming on tonight, Jim. And you're going to stay on for the last 5 minutes here?
Sure, I'd love to. Love to. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure having you on here. I'm going to go on, and we're going to do a quick little commercial. We'll come back, and we're going to talk with Tyrone.
Great.
And I'm on mute chat right now, Jim.
Thanks.
And here we go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. And now we're going out to Tennessee, to the Choctaw Reservation, to talk to our good buddy, Tyrone. Tyrone, how are you tonight, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Things are pretty quiet here in central Mississippi, and I live on the Choctaw Indian Reservation here on in central Mississippi. So things are a little quiet. We haven't had anything going for about a couple of months now, but people are still talking to me about their own experiences with sightings and encounters, you know, people are just coming out, you know.
That you talked to me about, Tyrone, was the other day. You had told me that somebody had a visual encounter of one, and it was like right in the middle of all kinds of houses and everything else.
Yeah, just three or four houses away from me, you know, just about.
Well, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I just learned about this not long ago, and the lady said she looked out. The children looked out the back door, and they got all excited. So she went out to see what was going on, and there was this creature, you know, just kind of standing there in the back of the house between several houses. You know, it's. These houses are back to back. You know, the only thing separating them is, you know, the yard. And this creature was standing there and casually walked away and started walking toward my house and walked down the hill in a woody area and disappeared, you know. So, we got things going. And I think a couple of months ago, about a mile or so away from my house, the lady came home one night, and I talked to this lady. She said it was her sister that saw it, and I talked to this lady just this morning, and she said her sister saw it, and she said when she drove up, there it was standing there. It was at nighttime, and the car headlights were shining on it, and there he was standing there, and when they pulled up to the driveway, he started walking backwards, and he was tall, dark, and hairy, and had pink eyes, they say. The next day, they went and checked around to see where he was standing. It rained before, so he left some footprints, several footprints around the muddy area. So I didn't get a hold of that till maybe a week or so later, and it's been raining then. So the rain has kind of washed the footprints off, you know.
Yeah, so, I understand.
We're still having Yeah, we're still having sightings and all that. Me and, you know, we got a real great friend in Searching for Bigfoot. His name is Mac Jackson.
Yeah, you and Mac have been going out there for quite a while.
So Mac, he's pretty dedicated to and being vigilant to finding Bigfoot. So he's been doing pretty good here. And Mac, he's seen on three or four occasions that he's seen he had encounters with the Bigfoot himself, you know. So he's a very good artist, very good artist, and he drew these creatures that he had seen. And what I saw in his drawings were the same kind of creature that I saw back in 1972. So,
can you describe that for us, Taron?
Yeah, it was Matt's drawing. He described it as when he was driving, the creature was standing on the road. And it was standing, all he could see was his side, and he looked really skinny from the side. But when he turned around and faced Mac, he was really broad and looked really big, you know. And there was a female creature with him, and the creature was coming down the embankment, and the female creature fell down. And two cars, Mac was coming one way, and there was another car coming up another way, and the male creature, he was signaling the female creature to hurry up and get up and cross the road. As soon as she got up, he grabbed her, and off they went, you know, across the road. But what I saw was, it was at nighttime, and we were out in the woods camping out, and we had a fire going. And one of the guys got up to, you know, sprinkle the ground, you know, and he said, "What in the world is that?" And everybody jumped up, and everybody just ran, and I was the last person to run. Anyway, what I saw was a dark figure, it took a step, and it stepped on like a dry branch, and it broke, and it gave out a big breaking sound, and we ran as fast as we could, and it was right behind us, you know, and we could hear each step that this creature was making. And when we came out through the woods by the highway, we could see there was a group of tall young pine trees all bunched together, and we heard the footprints coming, and the pine trees were swaying apart like something was walking right through it. So that was my experience 40 years ago when I was a teenager. And, some of the Choctaw Indian people here went camping out behind my mother's house. The first night out, they went... They called me a little after 2 o'clock in the morning. My cell phone kept on ringing, so I finally picked it up. And it was one of the guys, and he said, "Guess what?" I said, "What?" He said, "There are 3 creatures that surround our camp area." And they shined a flashlight. They heard, they were in their tents, and they heard tree knockings and hootings and howling and whistling and footsteps getting closer and closer. So they got out and shined a flashlight. There they were, 3 of them. And he described it as, I asked him, what does it look like? And he said, "Have you ever seen that movie Planet of the Apes, that orangutan?" He said,
"Yeah."
One of them had that orangutan look about the face. He said one of them was completely dark, black fur, and the other one was reddish brown, So they couldn't tell what the other one was because it was too far off.
Yeah.
They could still see his eyes, you know, through the forest, you know. But the funny thing about that, Marco, is that behind it was a water park and a lake. And about, I'd say 150 yards, 200 yards, something, estimation, is my mother's house. And commonplace now, my mother has seen it, saw it for the first time. My sister's seen it several times. My niece has seen it several times. So,
yeah, all around your mother's house.
Yeah, yeah, and we know that it eats deer because my sister saw one walking into the woods with a deer on his shoulder. So, we know that somehow or another they catch deers and deers. So, yeah. And anyway, talking about tree formations. Not long ago, I took a walk behind my mother's house. And every couple of weeks, I try to walk through the woods down the hill. And there was these, I think it was hickory trees or oak trees. They were literally bent over. And what I found was two tree formations, you know, two X's, like two somebody took the these trees and made X's with it, you know, crosses.
Yeah.
And maybe a couple of weeks later, I went back down there to see if something else came about. Anyway, those two X's were gone. Those two tree formations were gone.
Wow.
So, my mother still says that. She always says, well, we had a visitor last night. You know, every now and then she notices the creature out and about, you know, and she hears the low guttural grunts and growls and screams and stuff like that. So, yeah, we still have the creature, creatures, that is, you know, plural. There's more than just one, and we saw the video, and the video was kind of a reddish creature, and it was standing there, and he was looking to his right, kept on looking to his right, and then turned around and walked off like a man, and it wasn't no bear.
I tell you what,
Tom and his group came over in that same vicinity and walked through the woods and went to look at what we thought was a lair, a shelter that it was making. Anyway, later on, Mac inadvertently got a video of the creature. And I saw the video, and the two videos that I saw, it appears the face seems to be elongated it might have been the same creature, but people are describing, you know, flat face.
Right.
These two videos that I saw, appeared that they had elongated faces, kind of like a dog face or something like that, you know.
No, and there are creatures like that. That's what we call a dog-faced creature. Hey, let's open this up for everybody. You want to do that?
Yeah, sure.
We're going to have Rocky, Bobby, I'm going to put you on, and Jim. So we got Rocky, Bobby, Taran, and Jim.
Hey, everybody.
How you folks doing?
Hey, man.
Has anybody got any questions or like to offer anything up or have any informational things to talk about?
I have a question. This is Jim for Theron. Theron, what exactly, I missed part of that, and I don't mean to make you, I don't want you to go over everything. In summary, what did you guys see?
Well, it was on video. It was a creature, reddish brown. And it was standing there about maybe 50 yards, 75 yards away, and it kept on looking to the right, and it had that elongated look.
I see. When was the video taken? That's the part I didn't hear.
That was last year of May, I believe it was.
In May. Well, you know, we found that lair last year in March.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
So, that was taken after you guys came over several times.
We found that lair in March. That's when the TV station came down. Then Rocky came back with Bill. Rocky,
yeah.
When did you go? When did you and Bill go back? Was that still March?
Gosh, I can't even remember.
Well, it was right after Tom and I left, wasn't it? You and Bill came back.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was probably still March because that was about March 15th or 20th or so, I believe.
So this.
I think it was March or April.
Yeah, this video that was taken by my cousin, his name is Navian. Anyway, he took that video from his cell phone, and this was in May. I think it was the last part of May of last year. So the video, the creature is still around, and it's not the kind of creature that's commonly seen with a flat face. It was this kind of like an elongated face. And even Mac Jackson, he studied the video long and hard, and he believed that it was a female because he believed that he saw breasts on it. So, we got.
Hey, Bobby, did you have any questions at all?
No, I'm just listening.
Oh, that's okay. You're allowed to do that.
Thank you.
Well, did anybody else have a question or anything or a question to ask?
Yeah, I got a question here. The tree formations, especially the crosses, I don't know what it means or what it symbolizes. Maybe somebody out there knows what I'm sure that it's some kind of signal or sign, you know. Probably somebody knows something about it, you know.
I don't think anybody positively knows. My hunch and my thoughts are, and it's just based on so many reports of them. They have tree twists, and you know, a lot of tree twists that we found in and around areas, and those tree twists I think are markers to tell, you know, other creatures that maybe a territorial type thing. I'm not sure if it's territorial or if they're just trying to show, you know, an area or something like that. The tree formation. It looks like a show of strength to me. Well, yeah, it very well could be. I interpret it. But it's all supposition. Nobody. Well, it's like, you know, it's like a bear, you know, like these grizzly bears, right? They'll take their claws, and they'll claw the bark on the tree and leave a big mark, sort of kind of like maybe similar to that, I guess. Yeah, marking their territory or whatever.
Yeah.
Rocky, I bet you've seen a few tree twists out in the woods, haven't you?
I'd say so. Yeah, I've seen quite a few down in my little area. But to start with, I didn't really pay any attention to them because, well, most of the time I was down there hog hunting or deer hunting, and I knew that the hogs and deers didn't do it. But anyhow, it wasn't until after I talked to, well, y'all, that I even gave it a second thought. But we haven't ever seen anything that that would look like a lair or anything. I mean, there's lots of overhangs. There's lots of places to be without putting out any effort. But there's definitely tree twists.
Well, you know, when I found that lair in at the Choctaw Reservation in Mississippi, I went up that hill. Tom said, go up there and see what you see up there. And I went up, and I had never seen a lair before. But when I saw it, Rocky, I knew what it was. I mean, you could clearly see it was a bedding area, and it, and the creature had actually had made a blind right by the bedding area.
Right.
That's the darndest thing I'd ever seen.
When me and Bill went down there, you know, I was kind of surprised, and I guess Bill was too, that the trail that y'all saw wasn't the trail that we saw, because there had been so many people up and down through there that, I don't know, it was, they definitely beat the path down. But,
well, you know, that wasn't, I mean, it wasn't, we weren't off in the woods. We were just off a road. I mean, there was a few houses around there. And,
yeah.
And there was a house up the hill from us, you know. But I mean, there was no question that that was a lair. There was no question that, that the creature had made a bed out of pine, busted up the limbs. Was all that still there?
Oh, yeah, it was all still there.
You just don't go breaking pine limbs like that.
No. I camped in Theron's, out behind Theron's mother's house. And I would, I'd get up, well, after I slept a little bit, I got up that first day. I went out, and I stayed out in the woods till 3 o'clock in the morning, and then I went back and fixed some breakfast and took a nap, and then, I don't know, probably... Well, Bill showed up, and we went and checked over there where the lair was, seeing what happened with the bait. And then, you know, we would do our thing. I felt like I walked about 5,000 miles out there in the woods. I mean, I walked every inch of it. And what could possibly be a partial footprint, but they had done that controlled burn. And like I say, I was walking behind Bill, and Bill couldn't leave a footprint. I mean, it was just, if you got off the trail was just... I mean, it's like walking on concrete, and then you step off the trail, and it was just, I mean, like walking on a mattress or something. And Bill would take a step, and the footprint would, you know, it took about a second for that to disappear. And it didn't even leave much of a shine. I mean, I spent hours every day walking it. I went from Theron's mother's house all the way out to the highway. I went all the way to the, I walked the whole area and found that
highway
one.
That highway that you went to, there was one standing by the highway early in the morning some people saw.
Well, it was about... I don't know. It was probably about 4 o'clock in the morning when I walked out on the highway the first time. But then I took my chair and put it out in the brush and sat and listened, and I did hear movement. And you know, it wasn't deer or anything like that, because the ground that they was walking on was too soft, and, you know, it was, like I say, like walking on a mattress. But, you know, deer wasn't, there wasn't anything making any sound that was, shorter than Bill. And
where you had your little camping spot right there?
Yeah.
That's where it's commonly seen, right there. And it's usually coming out through there and comes out to where you were camping right there, and it stands mm-hmm. there, and then for a few seconds, and it turns around and goes back that way, you know. So,
well, I walk that whole area, and I stayed out there overnight. I stay out there till about 3 o'clock in the morning. But I didn't have any luck with that. Like I say, I heard movement, and it sounded like something that was tall enough that it was breaking some of the limbs out, smaller limbs out as it was walking through.
Many of the sightings right there where you were at my mother, behind my mother's house, many of the sightings were in broad daylight.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I think because I was there at that very area, I don't think it was, you know, I was closer down in the edge of the woods than the house, so I was kind of blocking the, my truck was, you know, right there. And, of course, it would have been a good time for him to come up and, you know, get him some groceries while I was out in the woods, but... Yeah, I walked all around all of that area behind your mother's house, and I thought I'd wore out a pair of brand new boots by the time I got done. But anyhow, we went up to where the lair was, and there's just been so much foot traffic, you know, with people's boots.
You know, back yonder where you were at, one night I went out to stand outside. This is what I heard, Rocky. I heard this. I heard, ooh, and it was just so long and loud. And I was wondering, what in the world is that, you know? But it was a loud scream, you know?
I didn't hear anything like that.
Yeah, I heard it twice before it quit.
Well, I think where I was kind of, I think it was whatever was down there was giving me a wide berth. When we went down to the where the lair was, there's just been so much traffic that, you know, I'm sure
It's still around because my mother talks about smelling some kind of weird smells when it's around. She can hear the grunts and growls, you know,
mm-hmm.
and screaming still, you know.
Well, I don't doubt that it's still around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back there where I was at would be the perfect place for it to, nobody was going to see it out there stomping around while it was walking around out in the woods.
Did you see the water park and the lake while you were walking through there?
Yeah, I walked all the way down to that. And, you know, I don't doubt that, that it was coming through up that way because just up from your mother's house, you know, the guy was getting his garden ready. And I'm sure he's garden out there long enough that thing knows where the tomatoes are going to be.
Yeah. Well, they came and tilled the ground, and the next day, while they were planting peas and other vegetables, there were fresh footprints all over that area.
I think it was Munch that was telling me that.
So,
Gosh, guys, it's getting late. I want to thank you all for coming on tonight. Taron, Rocky, Jim, and, of course, Tom and all his team, and we'll be back again next week. Hopefully Tom will be far enough along, he'll be able to give us a dump on
what's going on in on the reality series, and we'll get some more information on that.
All right.
I'd like to say goodnight to you all, and thank you again for coming on. And I'd like to say goodnight to all our listeners, and keep on Bigfooting.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legends, tales, and facts.